All right, well, I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 13th of August, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants online today. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you happen to be only on the audio portion today, would you please let yourself be known now?
Hi, Chantal. It's Anakin Scalise. For the moment, I'm only on audio. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We will note that. As a reminder to all participants, if you would please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll hand the meeting back over to Charlene Orr and Jeff Newman. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Michelle. And if we could have the first slide in the slide deck for tonight, that would be terrific. Hi, I'm Cheryl Langdonor. Jeff and I welcome you all again to today's call. And today we'll be looking at a single topic of registrar support for new registries. And Rubens Carl will be the lead on that. So perhaps staff, if Rubens could be made a presenter, that would help with the slide progression and administrivia. Also, it's going to be useful if everyone can do the progression through their own slides. As you can see, we have our usual agenda slide up in front, which means after my rough welcome, which is what's just happened, I'd like to ask if anyone has a statement of interest update. Not hearing anybody, and if you do need to make a statement of interest update, you can also just let us know in chat. Let's move on to the next slide, and with that, I will be handing on that to Rubens. Rubens, if you'd like to take the microphone and get us started through register support for new registries. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be moving on to slide five as Rubens begins. Over to you, Rubens.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's Rubens Carl for the record. I will be talking today about one of the discussions we had during our last political meeting, which is possible support for new registries. We'll start with a brief review of the ICANN sales channels model, which is on slide 5. It started in 1998, before ICANN even existed, because U.S. government, now at that time manager of the domain root zone or the domain name system, agreed with Network Solutions, now called after many corporations called VeriSign, to build a registrar model. And at the time they agreed to that model, there were already 2 million what we now know as GTLD domains. So it already started with a Boston market of 2 million domain names. ICANN was created approximately at the same time, and when it was created, one of its first tasks was exactly to oversee the transition from a monolithic model to a registrar model. It was done selecting a handful of registrars to a test bed, which started April 1999, and by July 1999, there are approximately 7 million GTLD domains. So it was right in the rise of the dot-com bubble, would be a bubble afterward, but it was rapidly increasing number of domain names. In a few months, while this was discussed, it increased threefold. The task that ended December 1999, so when next number here is when this module was actually run in a production level for them to say that, it was January 2000 and were 10 million domain names at that time. And so far, none of the 2012 GTLDs, even if you aggregate by registry families, like, for instance, Donuts has approximately 4 million domain names. The registry previously known as Famous for Media has 5 million domains and something. And none of them even achieved the 7 million domains that were available at that time. So economies of scale has changed drastically since then. And besides number of domains, a domain at that time costed 10 times more than what an usual domain costs today. So this was actually a market that was much times larger in money figures than it is today in the growing market. Economies of scale apply both on the infrastructure side, both on the let's say the offer side, but it also applies to domain sales channels. So cost of selling one specific TLD is lower if there are many domains under that TLD, and it gets higher if it's just a few TLD, a few domains or one. And while in the 2012 round introduced a novelty, the vertical integration, so a registry could, in theory, start its own registrar and sell its own TLD. There was no provision in the system for a differentiation between selling your own TLD or selling all TLDs. So every obligation, including how much you have to pay ICANN or when it was an insurance policy required, how was the value of that measure, all of those would equal between selling one owns TLD and selling all TLDs. So this was also hard scale because registrars could sell or were interested to sell more TLDs, would have more domains to share this fixed cost among them. So this is a just a review of how it was done. During our physical meeting, there were two main foundational questions that we discussed. First one was, is this a policy issue? Is this something that community should have a say on that? Or is this something that we should only let to market forces? So market forces would determine the outcome of how better model would imply. And at least for those on the physical meeting board, there was a consensus, as in measuring a rough consensus, of this being a policy issue, is not being let just to market forces. But on the other hand, there was a discussion between how to realize whether commercial TLD that's selling low, does it have a product defect, as in people are not interested in that TLD, it's not good enough for them to register, or is it a channel defect when the sales channel infrastructure is the one that's preventing that TLD from growing? So that is a very difficult question to answer. That's one that would require very thorough economic studies, and no one agreed that we have a clear picture of each TLD that is said that is not going that well. Is that more of a product problem or more of a channel problem. So if you go to slide 7, there were some angles on the issue. One was about registrants, that some a good number of registrants prefer concentrating their domain operations in a single registrant. And that's one of the factors that makes it of a sales channel issue for some new registries, for challenge registries, for incoming registries. If the register that's the favorite of one user, of a good number of users, doesn't carry a TLD, that usually hurts selling of that TLD. From the registrar's angle, registrars usually favor registry standardization, so they usually favor registries, new registries doing the same as previous registries were doing, because that costs less to them in the software development costs, in training costs for customer support personnel. And they say that they're less likely to onboard a niche TLD or a TLD that's differently run. So that is something that registrars brought to that discussion, and it's pretty much common sense that they operate that way. On the other side, registries, with very few exceptions, like .xyz, which has a proposal that is proposed as a generic domain as .com, for instance, most of them are trying to differentiate or focus on specific verticals or geographies. Let's say a GeoTLD, like .berlin. .berlin is focusing on the city of Berlin in Germany. Or .design. .design is focusing on design-oriented verticals, which could be even design companies or design areas inside other companies. But most of them are going in a differentiation path, which goes against what registrars would prefer, that would be as generic as possible and as possible. So these three angles, the three R's here, have very different agendas, of course, and they do not cooperate that much into a market that could grow. So if you could go to slide 8. We first looked at a possible solution that was mentioned in our physical meeting, but was not approved by at least by the group that was there, that registers above a certain size would have must-carry obligations. Let's say if you have more than 10 million domains under management, you must carry all the TLDs, which is something that happens in some other markets, some other industries, but that's something that the group thought it would only be an option if a problem of the sales infrastructure could be demonstrated. So this is not something that would could be done without certainty that it was a sales problem and sales channel problem, and this would correct that problem. This would fix that problem. So this solution was disregarded, and it's possibly because it would be very hard to prove a channel defect in a market that would require very careful study. So if you go to slide 9, then we can look into the possible solutions that the group brought and that we could. Before I go to that, I would like to answer Jim's question on how many registrars participate in this breakout session in Panama. We had at least one physically present, but we had comments from registrars that were participating online. Although we didn't have any identification or show me a card of are you a registrar, a registry, or someone, but some people self-identify themselves as I'm a registrar, I'm from a registrar. So we have at least two comments from those. But even so, what we got from them is pretty much commonplace in what me as a registry hear from registrars. So it also sounded exactly how registrars usually sound to me. So it seemed reasonable that this would represent a position. That said, one of the solutions that carried at least some consideration during the meeting, and people said, oh, we should look into that. That's not to mean say, hey, we should definitely do that. That's why we are saying that solution to be considered. One of them was of a wholesale register that would carry all the DTLDs that want to be carried by that wholesale register. A wholesale register is a register that doesn't sell directly. It's one that sells through resellers. And resellers are a very commonplace in less developed markets because they don't carry all the obligations and all the costs of being an ICANN accredited register. They transfer those to the wholesale register, but they have the end-to-end relationship with the domain registrant. So for the domain registrant, they appear as a domain sales outlet, even though they are not ICANN accredited. And in countries like, for instance, Brazil, that has zero ICANN accredited registers, all domain outlets are domain resellers, not domain registrars. So the idea of a wholesale register would be that ICANN would pay a wholesale register using whatever procurement process ICANN has for deciding on vendors, and ICANN would pay such a wholesale register to develop and support integration in order to carry DTLDs that wanted this last resort register, let's say like that. This would allow niche markets or jurisdictions that or verticals that have few non-accredited registers to have one at least that would provide resellers and then sell it. And we have a question from Ken. Please go ahead, Ken.
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Ken.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. First of all, you're talking, please correct me if I'm wrong, about ICANN subsidizing the development of wholesale registrars and subsidizing the cost of the integration. At this point in time, is this presumption based on the idea that because many registrants prefer to have use a single registrar, they need to have a wholesale process here to allow registrants to find domains? I would say, to me, it makes little sense. If, let's say I use GoDaddy as my regular registrar, and let's say that GoDaddy does not carry the extension design, it's almost as if either number one, you're going to force GoDaddy to carry everything, or number two, I don't have the ability to find someone on the internet who manages design or who's selling it. It would seem to me that if anything, ICANN could develop some sort of a promotional program and they would have a landing page showing which registrars are selling design. But I don't like the idea of using the community's money to subsidize development of new TLDs. This is a market economy, which means somebody made the decision to bring the TLD to market. It's not the balance of the community's responsibility to subsidize the success of that TLD. Years ago, when affiliates first started, there was really only one big player. The same with Newstar. We were both competing against a big player. He's still a big player today, but the point is we had to use our own resources to compete. We had our own resources to create awareness. I don't think that ICANN has a community responsibility using resources that it's getting from the registries, registrars, which is really end users' money, to develop markets for strings that either were poorly conceived or poorly funded to begin with. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. I would say that your comment has two parts. One is referring to a previous slide when we have a policy issue versus a market force issue. So you are clearly articulating you in the side of market force issues. And what we got during the physical meeting is that there were at least one or two that also preferred a market forces approach, but there was a strong support for seeing that as a policy issue. On the other part of your comment on the sale to a wholesale register, to the likelihood of a big register carrying a TLD, even the register that you mentioned, GoDaddy, currently uses a wholesale register for some specific TLDs. Most are CC TLDs, but they could use that for some DTLDs as well. So the possibility of having a single wholesale register also increases the likelihood of adoption by registrars from any size. And for some markets, some resellers might have more market power than the ICANN registers. And that usually happens within jurisdictions where there is no ICANN register, or in a vertical that's, that there is someone that has a good input into that vertical and could be a domain reseller. For instance, before WordPress became its own ICANN register, which is nowadays, they operated as a reseller, and they had a market power among the blog vertical that was reasonably high. So the availability of a wholesale register can play on all types of registers and all sizes of registers. Whether it succeeds or not, it's up to market forces, but it has an increased likelihood. And I don't think that anybody that mentioned each of the specific solutions that we will look into today, the three different solutions, believe that each individual solution would be the only solution. I think most of the people linked the solutions to specific concerns and imagine, say, hey, if we got them all these concerns solved or a good number of those, then we have a possibly viable solution. Let me go into question by Maxim on the chat. Maxim asked the question, how to avoid situation where that particularly say TLD initial deposit is $1 million non-refundable and that wholesale has needs to be covered by ICANN. Maxim, you see that people consider that issue with the solution that I will present later. So I defer that question to later. Question two, why not add your suggestion to the applicant guidebook, something like before venturing to TLD business, might be a good idea to have an interaction with ICANN accredited registers, to estimate technical integration issues, market idea, etc. That's a fine suggestion, but I will remind you something that happened in the 2012 round, that ICANN originally didn't specify that a new RIA would be required for selling new GTLDs. That decision came later, in a later version of HB after applications were filled. And when ICANN did that, ICANN basically threw everyone economic study into the trash, because now it would be a different market. So that's a nice thing to have if we also pair this with the predictability framework. Because discussing market possibilities usually depends on a scenario. And if the scenario changes, like it changed in 2012, then all these discussions would be useless. So having such a suggestion is nice, but will probably only be effective after we have a predictability framework, which we'll hopefully get in subsequent procedures. So that's a nice touching point here. Ken, is that an alternative?
No, it's kind of a response to the comment that you just made here, and I'll do it very quickly. And Cheryl, I hope you can hear me better now.
Cheryl here. Can you just speak a little tiny bit louder? Some of us are having a bit of difficulty with the volume, so perhaps just reorganize your microphone and speak a tad louder. Thanks. Back to you.
Thank you very much. I guess it boils down to the fact that this is not an anomaly. In the year 2000, when many people were in the process of putting in for the initial round of TLDs, we had a huge upheaval in the market. And if you look at the projections that the original applications had, they were based on the pre-2000 crash numbers. Well, that's the way economies work. And I think it's a mistake to throw the projections out, because it implies that there was no thought process. Maybe the numbers changed, but the assumptions, yeah, you have to look at the assumptions as well. And I'm sorry if we've had a change in the economy, but I don't think the change in the economy justifies subsidization or development of processes to make new TLDs more successful at the cost of the community's resources. ICANN was not, in my opinion, designed to foster success in new TLDs. ICANN is about security and stability. I think, honestly, over the next 3 years, a significant number of the TLDs that went to market in 2012 will not be in business in the future, or will be so small as to be non-existent. That's just my own personal thoughts, not the company. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. So if you can move to slide 10 now, we can look into the one of the other solutions that were discussed during the physical meeting, and a solution that gets some traction. It would be to increase the self-allocation limit. Currently, registries already can register up to 100 domains, some minor restrictions, but these are actually almost boilerplate restrictions that ended up not being effective restrictions. And for those up to 100 domains, registries already have to follow the registrar contracts, on those registrations. So a register contract is already incorporated into reference into registry contracts, but so a registry need to manage those 100 up to 100 domains within those register rules. And one idea that was mentioned during the meeting was that limits could be expanded to numbers like 5,000 or 10,000 registrations. Those are some of the numbers that were mentioned there. Actually, I don't remember any other numbers, so those two numbers seem to be what had in the collective conscience. And the idea is that up to that point, a registry would have difficulty showing registrars that TLD could trigger commercial interest, but after such a number, that would be easier. Say, hey, my TLD already grew to 5,000, 10,000, and so it's a viable TLD, a TLD that has demand, so can you please carry it? So this would allow registries to grow within that number and later be carried by the stronger sales channel of all ICANN accredited registers. And this idea had two versions. One was that, the idea of increasing self-allocation limit. And the other idea would be for all registry contracts to include a register license, possibly limited, possibly not. So, but this different implementation would actually don't have a specific limit. So it would be more similar to an unlimited version of this idea. But either way, it would be self-allocation in some way. Notice it's somewhat different from vertical integration due to the economies of scale I mentioned earlier. And to some point, for some organizations, splitting into two legal entities is harder than others, mostly non-profit and organizations that have different shareholder structure than for-profit enterprise. So that was one other idea that was discussed. Then we had a comment from Maxim. He said that the limit of 100 domain names is extremely low for geographic TLDs due to obligations before local governments. Sometimes number of streets is higher than a few hundred, but it was better than nothing. So possibly this number would, even 5,000, 10,000 could serve geographic TLDs or not. So that's also a consequence of what Maxim commented. And this was the second idea. Any comments or questions specific on this? Hearing none, let's go then to slide 11, which is something that was asked during that physical meeting was, how many TLDs would apply depending on which number is the limit? So a few counts from last week was that 44 registry families, which is like a single company that operates more than one TLD, sometimes through subsidiaries, sometimes its own. 44 of those have more than 20,000 domains under management. 11 of them have between 10,000 and 20,000. 16 of them have between 5,000 and 10,000. And approximately 30, as in 30 or a bit more, registries that are not brand TLDs that have already been launched has less than 5,000. So if Third level would be 5,000. That would apply to approximately 30 non-brand TLDs. If we expand that to 10,000, it would go near 50. And if you go to 20,000, that will go to near 70. No, near 60. Near 60. Sorry. Note also that there are many TLDs that have not been launched by the registry operators. They acquired the rights to operate in 2012, but they are simply storing them in their drawer. Could be they are waiting better channel conditions, could be they are waiting for better overall demand or maturity of the market. They could be waiting for better universal acceptance of TLD, or nobody knows why, but we have a good number of not launched TLDs, and that's something that hurts a bit our analysis on this, because we don't know for which reason it has not been launched, and they could easily double the numbers that are listed here. Maxim had a comment that brand TLDs follow market share use of the company. A low number of domains does not mean lack of success of the particular TD. Correct, and that's why this was restricted to non-brand TLDs. For a brand TLD, three domains, but those three domains have high recognition among their brand customer base is a success. So that's why these numbers discussion only apply to TLDs that are actually counting on sale of domain registrations to succeed. And that's what we have for this idea. So any questions, comments? Going once, going twice. So let's go to slide 12, where we have our last solution that was commented in the physical meeting about a registry clearinghouse. It was a solution that carried, incorporated two issues that were mentioned by participants in the meeting. One of them was that sometimes a registry requires a prepaid deposit of some value. And if a registry needs to prepay an account at every TLD there is, it actually would require lots of money to do that. And they would have to guess their demand. Oh, I'm probably selling 100 domains in that TLD, 1,000 in that other. And that is becoming trickier to do when volumes are low. So you have actual odds of 0 or 1 domain and say, oh, how do I prepay 1 domain if the registry requires a prepayment? So one of the ideas of a clearinghouse would ask for something, some prepayment for registered that wants to pay, but that payment wallet would be shared among registrars. This is actually something that is already used in practice, although not established by ICANN, but at least one backend registry, which allows registrars to pay and then flow for each different registry operator. But this could also apply to postpaid invoicing. Let's say instead of receiving hundreds of invoices or actually dozens of invoices, a registrar could receive a single invoice for consolidated for many TLDs, make one payment, which could sometimes, due to the international banking transfer costs, be somewhat high. consolidate that money flow and split among registries. And the other issue that was imagined to be tackled by such a clearinghouse would be currency conversion issues. And because, for instance, even if a registrar and a registry seems that they feel right for each other and say, oh, you should sell my TLD, and say, hey, I will sell your TLD, but say, oh, my economy here uses money from Disney ducks, and then the other has said, oh, no, we don't use that money here, we use this other currency. So even the currency conversion is a challenge, even for registries and registries willing to do business. So this would tackle those issues by having local currency for both parties. Registries would receive local currencies, registries would get local currency, and that clearinghouse would do the bridge between registrar and registrar. We have a comment from Jeff Newman that there is nothing stopping registrars from switching from prepaid to postpaid to encourage registrars to sell their TLD. That's right, Jeff, and that's actually what most TLDs seem to be doing. I actually don't know for a fact of a TLD asking for prepaid. That must be someone out there, because people brought this concern to the table. But actually, most new TLDs operators I know are doing postpaid payments. But even for postpaid invoicing, there are issues relating to making international transfers for each registry in a different jurisdiction, or making payments for dozens of different registry operators. So this is also applied to post-payment. It's not restricted to prepayment. But in prepayment, this is what usually happens. Jeff also mentioned that some things should be left to market forces, and I believe that was mainly what people mentioned, that no solution would address all problems, even if they were to exist. That was to discuss which ones could be addressed and how, and which ones should not. So I don't think that even those that indicated that a policy issue instead of a market forces issue, imagine that every problem needs to be addressed by ICANN, even if some could. And note also that not all problems are channel defect problems. So every problem that's a product defect wouldn't be helped in any way, no matter how perfect the sales market is. So there are limits to everything that can be done in any area. So, any more comments, questions on this? And most of all, how do we proceed with those three solutions that are being considered? So, is there one that we should disregard from start, from scratch, or should all three continue to be discussed? Ideas? Thoughts? J. test is typing. Just suggest you should discuss all three in the initial report. That's one way of looking, so we don't have to kick any of these ideas up on the street. We can look into all of them. With pros and cons laid out clearly. Anyone from pros and cons from each an idea they want to discuss now? We can post to the list later, but discussing now would already jumpstart the process of those discussions. Many people are typing, so we'll probably hear some comments. One from Jason too, that he's not 100% clear if this can be solved with easing of vertical integration restrictions. If by that you mean that, for instance, vertical integration would be allowed within the same legal entity but with account book separation, that is how it's done in some other industries. For instance, in the telecom market, there is a good number of jurisdictions. There is an allowance for the same legal entity to participate in the wholesale and end-user market, but they should be accounted in separate, just for purposes of monitoring by regulators. So it could be a solution, but that solution was not mentioned in the physical meeting, but we could add that solution as well. Just. We have a comment from Krista, where emerging markets where there are few account-intensive registers and registries have to rely on resellers. Also an expected hurdle that ideally there would be some type of plan worth developing. Thanks, Krista, and I will take that as looking into the wholesale register idea, because that's what the idea that was specifically targeted, wholesale markets. Jim's typing, but Jim thinks that this deliberation would be great for concerted outreach to registrars. Let's do that. But I would say that at least one of those ideas I already vented with some registrars, and it was already incorporated into that discussion based on register feedback. But that doesn't apply to all of the ideas. So if you could send them all of the ideas, we can get comments on each one of those. That's a nice point, Jim. Thanks. And seeing no more people typing, no more hands, I will go. Let's get back to Cheryl then. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. Cheryl Langdon-All for the record here, and I've just jumped you to slide 14. Which is the consensus call process. And we obviously in today's discussion, this is not going to be the last opportunity. Wise, I must have, didn't think I double-hitted things, but anyway, I'm taking you back to slide 14 again. Sorry, put me right off, and I looked up and it was something entirely different. Even with today's discussion and deliberations, in our usual form, we're not going to make any decisions in any one meeting. And so with the refinement and development of pros and cons on these options that were discussed during the Panama meeting, we will take these to the list as well and look forward to further discussion and refinement that can happen. Jeff, sure, we can unlock the slides for all now. If we unlock the slides and if everyone knows that we are on slide 14, and we're about to start our next agenda item discussion, which is on the process to achieve consensus. Thank you, Emily. Appreciate the thinking. And with that, Jeff, did you want to jump in and start leading this?
Sure. Yep. Thanks, Cheryl. This is good. So this discussion that we're going to start today on the consensus call, well, next steps and consensus call process, is going to be evolving. So this is probably the first of, I think, several times that we'll have this type of discussion, especially as we get closer to finalizing recommendations and then doing the actual consensus call. But this was a discussion, I think, that we started in earnest in Panama during the first session, I believe. So just to kind of recap and rewind a little bit of what the next steps are, obviously we have a public comment period ongoing for the work tracks 1 through 4. We also have this discussion here on the 5 new issues that we just finished with Rubens, or I should say finished the initial discussions on, where if you remember in our work plan, which we could probably put a link up in Adobe as well if it's not already there, that has us going and starting the process within the next couple weeks of coming up with some kind of recommendations or preliminary drafts of a supplemental initial report on these 5 issues. The 5 issues, just to remind everyone, we started discussing after or in Panama, and the other issues included things like the role of private auctions, the contention mechanism of last resort, the role of public comment, and the ability to make changes during the application process were the other 4 that we discussed previously. So we've discussed working on this supplemental initial report to come out prior to ICANN 63 in Barcelona, and that's, I think, where we're on a good path to get there. So while that is all going on, of course, the public comment on the initial report that was released in early July, that comes due. Comments are due on September 5th. And so what we will do at that point is divide up into subgroups and analyze those comments. So we're going to review, consider those public comments in order to either draft new recommendations where we believe they should be changed or where we didn't have recommendations but just options. We will also look at the public comments to see whether we need to revise the existing ones that we have in there. So there's going to be lots of work with the sub-teams and then ultimately the full working group. But the default, just to remind everyone, is that we are, it's generally understood to be the 2012 implementation. So if we, sorry for the phones in the background, I can't stop that. So it's going to go on for another 15 seconds. But so if we don't come up with a consensus on changing what happened in 2012, so it's understood that the default will be what happened in 2012. And then, of course, all the recommendations will have to go through what we'll discuss in a couple minutes, which is the consensus call in the full working group. So even if we work out some parts within sub-teams, everything ultimately is going to have to be through a consensus call of the full group. And again, we will also need to come to a conclusion on whether things that we recommend are policy changes, or in other words, recommendations that they adopt, that I can't adopt, or whether they're implementation guidance. So in other words, things that we have preferences for but defer to ICANN if those things need to be changed due to them being purely implementation-related details. So moving on then, and of course, if anyone's got any questions, please type them in the chat or raise your hand. Greg, okay. Cool. Greg, please.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. Following this process, does this mean that essentially the 2012 implementation will then become a policy recommendation of the PDP working group, even to the extent that it obviously diverged from the 2007 policy recommendations? So essentially, this will anoint the end results of 2012, unless we do otherwise, as now GNSO policy recommendations, even though many of them mutated or came into existence otherwise after the policy recommendations and were never policy recommendations of the GNSO.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. It's a very complex question. With I'll give you my interpretation or my personal belief. So I'm sure others can weigh in. I do not believe that if we are unable to reach consensus on anything, that the 2012 what happened in 2012 will become quote policy. I just think that we would reflect in the final report that we were unable to achieve consensus or will indicate what the level is, according to when we go to the next couple slides, and that we will say that there was no consensus to change it, but we would not make a statement that would say, and therefore what happened in 2012 should now be memorialized as policy from here on out. I just believe that at this point there's no consensus on the exact way to move forward on that particular issue other than the way we did it in 2012. And, of course, that could always be revisited by the GNSO at subsequent points. So I don't think that would be policy in the sense of enshrined, this is consensus policy, but it would be more of a path forward only because we were unable to come up with a consensus to change the 2012 implementation. So I know that's not a perfect answer, but that would be my personal belief. And so Robin says, will the Board of Directors have any vote or approval of our group's recommendations? And Robin, I believe that everything that we do, that we be meaning that we recommend to the GNSO and that the GNSO recommends to the board, will ultimately have a vote of some sort of the Board of Directors. So I believe that that will happen, though we have not discussed this issue with the board. And then Ruben says we have to sort out 2007 recommendations that were likely not a good idea, like first come, first serve, while there is a pent-up demand, and GNSO recommendations that were overturned to worse. So, Rubens, I think you're right. I think we will certainly have to go through in the final report with a fine-tooth comb and make sure that we may, for example, by consensus, believe that what happened in 2012 by consensus, we may believe that what happened in 2012 is not the way we want it to go in the future, but we may not, by consensus, have a recommended path forward. And I think even that is an important aspect. So we may have to divide certain things, as I think it's sort of what you're saying. So there may be interesting areas in the report that says we disagree completely with what happened in 2012, but unfortunately do not have consensus on the exact way forward. So we'll have to see as those issues come up. Anne says, question, how will we avoid a stalemate at the board level where our advice may conflict with DAC advice on subpro? Historically, the stalemate delays forward progress. Question. So, and another great question. I think our hope was, because we are inviting SEAC members to actively participate and that we are specifically in trying to get their feedback. If there were areas that the GAC has provided its comments and we've attempted to deal with those comments, leaving the GNSO, well, first this working group and then the GNSO, then hopefully the board will have enough information to not completely have a stalemate, but of course there's certain things that are required in the bylaws that will or theoretically could result in some amount of delay, but hopefully not as much delay as we saw between the final policy the last time and the 2012 round. And then the follow-up question, what is the status of GAC outreach on the initial report? So, Anne, as you probably are aware, all throughout the process, we've, or the last several years, we've gone in and updated the GAC on what's going on. We've solicited their input and have incorporated their input into our initial report where we could. We have also specifically directly sent the report, the initial report, to the GAC, asking them for their comments by September 5th. They are, from what I understand, fully engaged in trying to come up with comments, though they may need some more time on this. And as Taylor, thank you, Taylor, Bentley says in the chat, GAC's in the process of reviewing a draft. So I am hopeful that they will come with some comments and that we will incorporate those as appropriate. Sorry, these comments are moving quick. So we're making every effort to reach out to them, and we'll continue to do so up and through the final report. And some good conversation going on in chat. So just going to that now. What will we do then with GAC consolidated view? And it highlights relevant items that correspond in the existing advice. So let's wait until we get those reports to automatically believe that there will be a lot of conflict. Great. So with that said, let's go on to the next slide, slide 15, which you all should have control over. So as you all know, that 3.6 in the GNSO Working Group Guidelines define the methodology for making decisions. And just to kind of recap, it's really for Cheryl and I as the co-chairs to make the evaluation of the how we're going to designate. And then, of course, we'll designate each part of the report. And, of course, we'll publish that to this group for review. The items that we could designate are indicated in that paragraph there, full consensus. Consensus, strong support, but significant opposition, divergence, and minority view. After this working group has discussed the our designation, then we could reevaluate those based on the group discussions, or then we can and publish an updated evaluation. And then if there are still disagreements, there are mechanisms in the working group guidelines on how to oppose those, but I'm not going to go over those now. And we just want to remind everyone, and I think this is probably the most important one that we keep trying to stress, and I see it playing out or having played out in discussions for other groups. The way that Cheryl and I, and frankly the leadership team, will evaluate the, how to designate each recommendation is not going to be by individual vote. It's not going to be, for example, if we get 100 people from the registry stakeholder group all voting in one way and 15 other people feel a different way, that because 100 greatly outnumbers 15, that we're going to use that as the measuring stick for how to designate the advice. We are going to look at the representativeness of the positions that are articulated. We are going to look at positions as opposed to individual views. One thing that Cheryl and I may ask for at some point as we get closer to these determinations is for each of the stakeholder groups slash constituencies to designate a person that could speak on behalf of that individual constituency or stakeholder group if necessary, so that we can, that would help Cheryl and I and the leadership team understand whether a position is being advocated by an individual or by a constituency or stakeholder group advisory committee as well. So as we get closer to that part of the process, and this is a number of months away, we will likely ask for that, again, so we can understand whether someone, when they're advocating a position, is doing that on their own behalf, which is fine, or their company's behalf, or whether they're doing it on behalf of a constituency or stakeholder group. So turning back now to the comments before we move on to the next slide. Question from Anne, will the board be commenting on the initial report? And we did send a letter to the board as well as to the staff for responses. And so I believe that we will be getting responses from both the board and the staff. And so, in fact, I believe that the staff may have already sent, I've been out for a week, and I saw an email which I think may have been a response from Akram and GDD. But I will defer to, because I have not opened it yet, so I will defer to Steve and Emily and Cheryl to see whether that was a response by staff, and if it was, if we could post it, because I'm sure they're going to post that onto the correspondence page. Sorry, Steve and Emily, to put you and Cheryl on the spot. I just haven't opened it up yet because I received it when I was away. Or am I imagining things? Cheryl just says, yep. Okay. Yeah, Cheryl, please.
No, I was just going to say it was basically, there we are. There's the letter. You can all read it yourself. I don't have to do a paraphrase. Back to you, Jim.
Great, thanks. I have not opened this up yet, so I'm assuming it's a full response, but it may be that they need more time. I don't know. Again, I haven't clicked on it. I literally just got back very late last night. So hopefully that answers your question. As Jim says, it basically says it's a lot to cover and they'll do their best, but we'll also outline. Okay, so it's not a full response yet. Anne is saying, can we extend the time deadline? And we can discuss that as we get closer to the deadline. At this point, I think we gave everyone a full 60 days. I understand it's a lot, and I understand that it's the summer, but let's do what we can to get to that deadline. If we extended it now, we'll just get another request to extend it later on. So Cheryl is reproducing the letter. So thank you, and I apologize for not having read it before. I just know that we did receive a letter. Okay, moving on to the next slide, just in case in slide 16, what those different designations are, and that's taken, I believe, that's not sure if that's exactly word for word what it says in the working group guidelines, or it's a very close paraphrase of how each position is designated. And I believe, I know, again, this is just the start of those discussions, and completely appreciate the questions. We're not going to have answers to every part of it now, but as we get closer to the final report making those recommendations, Cheryl and I will continue to keep you updated as to the process we're going to use. But for now, I think we can move on to the ICANN 63 session planning. And so, Cheryl, if I could turn that over to you, as I have to drop off Adobe, but I will be still online, or on the phone, sorry.
Thanks, Jeff, and welcome back. So if I can get you a Cheryl for the record, if you can get you now to move through to slide 18. You have control over the slides still. And on slide 18, you'll see our tentative ICANN 63 session timing on Saturday. That's Saturday the 20th of October. We're currently planning the full working group to meet between 0900 and 1:15 local time in Barcelona. And then on day three, that's Monday the 22nd of October, there will be a work track 5 specific session planned between 0900 and midday local time, with questions for the full working group session. We also would like to, questions for the full working group session will be, where do we envisage we will be at this stage here, where do we see we're going to be on at time for ICANN 63, and what should the purpose or anticipated outcome be for our full working group session. I'll just mention to you at this stage for the Work Track 5 session on the Monday, Work Track 5 leadership and that work track are already starting to discuss their work plan in detail with the reference point of hoping to have some initial reporting ready out by ICANN 63, so we would predict that that will be the primary topic for their three-hour session on Monday the 22nd. So coming back to our full work group meeting between 0900 and 1:15, I'd like to open a queue now to see whether you have some initial responses of where you envisage we will be at this stage. Certainly the leadership team will continue to discuss this and we will update a more detailed agenda as we work towards ICANN 63. Steve, can I ask, have I missed anything? It's 2 a.m. here, 2:15 a.m. in the morning after all. Have I jumped over anything, glossed over anything? Over to you, Steve.
Thanks, Cheryl. This is Steve Chan from Steph. And no, I don't think you missed anything or glossed over anything, but I would add, I guess, some context around that first question about where we envision we'll be at this stage. So we do have the draft work plan that's been shared with the group on several occasions and within the agenda and within this Adobe Connect room chat. So that gives us an idea of where we think we will be, at least tentatively. So that according to that plan, the idea is that we would have probably for about a month been operating in a series of sub-teams that would be reviewing the public comment received. So from that perspective, related to the initial report and comment, that is at least anticipated where we'll be for that aspect. In addition, there may also be the supplemental report on the 5 additional topics that we've been discussing the last couple of weeks, or I guess actually over last month and a half, in fact. So there may, in fact, be a supplemental report for those additional topics. Those may be out for public comment as well, or some other form of way to seek input. And looking at the report, I think that might actually be all that we had on the docket for planning and in anticipation for ICANN 63. So I guess for additional context, I just wanted to highlight that's where we expect we might be for those two aspects. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Took me a moment to come off mute. Yes, certainly I would think seeking input via fresh initial reporting would be a certain aim for our group, if at all possible. With that, is there anyone who wants to make any sort of comment or contribution? Obviously, we'd like you to diarise now those blocks of time, so those of you who are in Barcelona can join us face-to-face, and those of you who are not, are able to join us remotely, because we will, of course, have our normal remote participation tools available. This will be a working session of the full working group, and we will only have the one opportunity at this stage for doing this. We're not going to be able to break it up or shift it around to other days. We could, I suspect, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, if needs be, if there was some desperate pressure to do so, switch WorkTrack 5 and the full working group slots around. But I would suggest that ill-advised, unless we have the most extreme pressure, because WorkTrack 5 needs to avoid the GAC meeting of high-level meeting that we'll be running on the Saturday. Steve, yes, back to you.
Thanks, Cheryl. This is Steve Chan again from staff. And Cheryl, yeah, you're right. There's some flexibility left in the schedule. You'll note on the top of the slide, it says 10, of course. So in addition to possibly switching between the full working group and the WorkTrack 5, there remains probably some flexibility in, let's say, on Saturday, if there is a compelling reason raised by the members that the afternoon session, the sub-pro needs to be in that slot instead of, let's say, RPMs, there's still a possibility to switch things around to make sure things work for the working group and for the rest of the community. At least in the tentative schedule right now, the expedited PDP on RDS is also intended to operate the entire day of Saturday as well. So I guess just some additional context. And without having the entire schedule in front of you, it's hard to know exactly where there might be issues and conflicts, but to the extent there are any that working group members identify, certainly do bring it to our attention, and we'll try to do what we can to mitigate those issues. But I realize it's early and hard to identify those issues, but the sooner you do so, it certainly will help all of us in our planning activities. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would suggest that you'll be seeing something similar to this slide rear its ugly head again and again between here and Barcelona until such times as we have a final as opposed to tentative session timing, and that we have a more extended and confirmed agenda. So if there's no one who wishes to speak further on that, is there anything else we need to know about for ICANN 63C before we move on?
Thanks, Cheryl. This is Steve again. At this stage, not that I'm aware. Thanks.
Excellent. In which case, move on to slide 19, the last one in the slide deck, and that's a call for any other business. Is there any other business? Nobody typing. Nobody raising their hand in the Adobe Connect room, which is excellent. With that, if I can just ask for our date and time for our next meeting to come up on screen. Thanks, Greg. It seems like a late-night cabaret to me, of course, with all these meeting times, but that's another story. Just for the record, Greg's mentioned in chat there's no business like show business, so I was having a joke back with him. Steve's typing, which hopefully is going to be the date and time of the next call. Thank you very much, Steve. That is the 27th of August. That will be at 2000 UTC, and it will be another 90-minute call. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you one and all for joining us today. And please, we really are starting now another fairly intensive, we don't have a lot of time between now and Barcelona and now and the end of the calendar year. You need to get your discussions going on list. We can prepare Google Docs for comment and suggestion mode on these things, and that may be a good plan forward for the pros and cons development on the issues. on the issues that have been discussed today. So with that, and my apologies for my Android thinking it needed to talk to me in the middle of that wrapping up, but I don't know why that did that. Take over from Google. Thank you, one and all. Thank you, staff. And with that, we can stop the recording, and that'll be bye for now from me and from Jeff.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. Meeting has been adjourned. Operator, please stop the recording and disconnect all remaining lines. Have a great day, everyone.